Hello, welcome back for another episode of Dimes of Crime. This is your host, Haley.
And I'm Richa.
And welcome back for part two of the Ken and Barbie Killers. Richa and I are recording this in one setting, but for you it's two parts. So what are you drinking today, Richa?
Since we're literally recording 2 seconds ago, I'm still drinking champagne.
Yeah.
Also, if you guys have not listened to part one, then you should absolutely stop listening to this one and listen to part one first.
Yeah, it won't make any sense if you don't listen to part one. And I am drinking a red blend from Rabble. It's cool wine. Check it out. Not sponsored, just like the wine. And disclaimer.
But if you do want to sponsor us, Rabble, please do.
Yeah. We're here. Right here. My email is at dimesofcrime@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Disclaimer is still applying. That basically everything's going to be involved. Minors, sexual assault, dismemberment,
sodomizing,
cruelty against animals, sodomizing, you name it, it's in here. So please keep that in mind. Viewer discretion is advised. And now, here we go. Back to Canada. So here's our recap. As we mentioned at the end of the last episode, Paul Bernardo had been quite mad finding out his girlfriend, Carla Homolka, was not a virgin when they first met and felt that defect needed to be reimbursed somehow. And it was not just that. Paul was starting to feel bored in the relationship and felt a hunger for something new and fresh. Somehow, in Paul's twisted mind, that meant asking his girlfriend if he could have sex with Carla's 15-year-old sister. Paul literally said to Carla one day, and I quote, "If you really love me, let me do it to Tammy," end quote. Oof. The audacity of this man. And from here, things only got worse.
Worse. And the fact that Carla didn't leave him is shocking.
Right. Hold on, I need a bigger drink. Okay. So until this point, Carla had accepted her boyfriend treating her like a piece of trash. But that was all right. And what they had agreed in the beginning, Paul was the master and she was the slave, which I think Carla really liked, because somebody was finally like dominating her when she is tendly to be the domineer, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Then Carla found out her boyfriend was a serial rapist, but that was not an issue either. In fact, one of the victims told the police that a woman had been present during the attack and filmed the whole thing. The point is, Carla tolerated a lot and perhaps even enjoyed and wanted to be a part of it all. But surely she did not want Paul to rape her own teenage sister. This was a point where Carla could said absolutely not and walked away. But no, not even the idea of Paul sexually assaulting Tammy was a deal breaker for her. Quite the contrary. Carla actually thought this was a great opportunity for them to minimize risk, take control, and keep it all in the family.
Oof.
She really knew how to find the bright side of things. So we know very little about Tammy Homolka, but she was a sweet school girl known for her athletic abilities. Playing soccer was Tammy's favorite. Like her older sister, Tammy also had long blonde hair and gorgeous smile. But this is where the similarities between the sisters ended. Tammy also liked Carla's handsome boyfriend, but what you can expect. Paul was always so nice to Tammy, telling her she was beautiful and buying her and her friend food and drinks all summer. In other words, Paul was grooming Tammy. And that was
barf.
Something Car- Yeah, definitely barf. And just more barfing. Where am I? Sorry. And that was something grooming. Carla did not like at all. So she was okay with the whole rape thing, but Paul having any kind of relationship with Tammy made Carla furious. That summer, Carla had helped Paul break the blinds in Tammy's bedroom so he can film Tammy undressing at night. She even had sex with Paul on her sister's waterbed while pretending to be Tammy and using the teenager's sex toys, but nothing was enough.
That's disgusting.
Very. So one night, Carla crushed some Valium tablets and spiked Tammy's spaghetti dinner with the dust. When Tammy then fell asleep, Carla stood there watching when Paul masturbated beside her unconscious sister's bed and tried to rape her. Fortunately, at that time, Tammy began to wake up and the twisted couple had about aborted their disgusting mission. But needless to say, Paul was not happy. Carla needed to fix the situation, and what could have been a better way to do it than to offer her sister's virginity to Paul as a Christmas present?
I have no words.
I know.
I'd rather listen to the hamster tour story again.
Yeah. So on December 23rd, 1990, during a Christmas party at the Homolka family home, Carla spiked Tammy's drink with animal anesthetics. Hold on.
As Haley takes a big drink of her wine.
Two big drinks. Whew. It's hard to drink wine. Like red wine. Like big drinks. Okay. So it took a long time and many drinks before Tammy fell asleep on the sofa. At this point, the poor teenager's parents and another sister's, Lori, had already gone to bed. Nobody was there to stop Carla from pouring halothane on a cloth and holding it over Tammy's mouth while Paul pulled her green track pants and brutally raped the unconscious teenager. The whole and unimaginable incident was filmed and on tape. Paul can be heard ordering Carla to touch her sister too. Even though she agreed to part of it, Carla was clearly distraught and increasingly unhappy with what was happening, and then Tammy vomited. So Paul and Carla had not exactly thought about the fact that before they drugged Tammy, she ate Christmas dinner and drank several drinks. Of course, the poor thing vomited. Paul and Carla did not try to clear Tammy's throat. They did try to clear Tammy's throat and at the same time get rid of all the evidence before calling 911. But it was too late. Tammy was pronounced dead upon arrival at the hospital. Paul and Carla had not meant to kill Tammy, but their vile and selfish act, had just cost the innocent 15-year-old's life.
Completely. Not just any innocent 15-year-old, Carla's freaking sister. This is so.
Right. Completely senseless death. And the disturbing thing is that Tammy Homolka's death was ruled an accident. It was thought alcohol poisoning caused her to choke on her vomit.
Which is crazy because, like, no one do a rape test? Like, a rape test?
And she had chemical burns on her face from having the cloth held over her with drugs on it. So they didn't even, like, think about that. They just said, Paul and Carla told them their stories. And, like, they said they tried to resuscitate her and that she just drank too much and started vomiting on herself. And they just believed that. Which, I guess, I don't know. That'd be a hard one. Because you wouldn't think that your other daughter would do that to your other daughter.
I'm not necessarily sure it's hard for the cops. It's a crime. You investigate it. Yeah. I can understand why it's hard for the family. But as cops, you investigate that shit.
Right. So Paul and Carla escaped without consequence and were able to continue hurting others. On June 7th, 1991, Carla invited another 15-year-old girl who had she befriended at a pet shop for a, quote, girls' night out, end quote. This girl, who is known only as Jane Doe, was then drugged, abused, and videotaped at the home of Carla and Paul. Fortunately, Jane Doe survived. But as she had no memories of what had happened, she visited Paul and Carla again in August and went through the same exact thing again.
What the fuck?
Because she was drugged, so she didn't remember.
Oh my God.
This time, the girl stopped breathing. But in the end, she lived and nothing came out of it. Then there was a 14-year-old girl, Leslie Mahaffey. Leslie came from a close-knit family. She had a younger brother called Ryan. Her father was an ocean photographer and her mother a teacher. But as many teenagers do, Leslie eventually began to rebel, disobeying her parents' rules, especially the curfew. Leslie spent long periods away from the family home, which was located halfway between Toronto and St. Catharines in Burlington. But no matter where she went, Leslie always kept in contact with her family. So that is how her parents knew something was terribly wrong when, after 2 weeks of not hearing from her in the summer of 1991, Leslie did not call them even on her own birthday. The last time anyone has seen Leslie was on June 14th when she attended a memorial for one of her friends who had died in a car accident, as well as an informal get together. Any thoughts, Richa?
This is just so hard, honestly. Because we were doing this back to back, so there's been no break, so it's just a lot to process. I know of this case and it's still hard to process, so for those of you listening and hearing this for the first time, I'm not even sure where your thoughts and thoughts in your brain is, honestly. When I read about this case for the very first time, I could not get past the fact that she did that to her sister, and that her sister was their first, like, was at least her first victim, like, that died.
Right.
Right. Not just sexual abuse, but died. And to me, that's, I'm not even sure how I can imagine that, because it's just so beyond something I would ever understand or comprehend. It's hard to even imagine. So, yeah, everything else beyond that, like this girl who somehow by some miracle didn't remember what had happened to her, but then happened to go back and terrible things happened to her again. That's sad. And I don't know, all of it is just hard. This is the hard part about true crime, is I don't like talking about this stuff.
Oh yeah. These ones are hard when it's minors and then it's sexual assault. It's definitely hard. And because we do like a lot of girl crimes, I mean, minors is not uncommon, but sexual assault, I feel like, is more uncommon. Like, it definitely happens, but
yeah, it just, something about ruining the innocence and purity of kids just absolutely devastates me. I mean, that's true for any human, really, that you take, that loses their life. But yeah, just kids and minors is hard to hear.
So Leslie was at that get together and she missed her curfew by many hours that evening. And as she tried to enter her home at about 2 a.m., the door was locked. I understand that Leslie's parents were not happy with her coming and going how she pleased, but by locking that door, they unfortunately made the biggest mistake of their lives. The 14-year-old girl was out alone without a place to go. Leslie called a friend using a payphone and asked for help, but was told no. So not having any other option, Leslie began walking back home, and it was then that she crossed paths with Paul Bernardo.
Oof.
Paul lured the poor girl to his car by offering cigarettes, but instead of having a smoke, Leslie was blindfolded and abducted. Back at Carla and Paul's place, Leslie was tortured and sexually abused for several days in unimaginable ways. Now, we do not know for sure if Paul had planned to let his victim go eventually. He did later claim he intended to free the girls, but who knows if he was telling the truth. But when Leslie told him that her blindfold was slipping, that very next day she was dead. Paul would later claim that Carla killed the 14-year-old girl by giving her a lethal dose of Harlequin, and in turn, Carla said that it was Paul who strangled Leslie. But no matter who did it, another young woman lost their life just because they happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time as a result of not being able to enter their home safely. Thoughts?
Nope. I'm just going to breeze past all of this. I'm just waiting for you to rip it off like a Band-Aid. I'm trying to minimize the back and forth so we can just get through it in one swift go. And it's like, the Band-Aid's been ripped off. And then I'm ready to rip into my thoughts about Carla Homolka.
To get rid of the evidence, Paul and Carla decided to dismember Leslie's body and encase each part of her remains in concrete. The blocks were discovered soon after by a horrified couple canoeing in Lake Gibson on June 29th, 1991, the very same day Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka married. The newlyweds kept quiet for quite some time, but of course they had to strike again. On April 16th, 1992, Paul and Carla abducted 15-year-old Kristen French, a talented member of a precision ice skating team. Kristen attended Holy Cross Secondary School in St. Catharines and was walking back home that day. She was approached by a strange couple asking for directions. The friendly teenager was happy to help. Which, I guess if you saw a couple in broad daylight and they asked for directions, like, I wouldn't really think twice of it.
I would. But that's because I'm
even as a true crime fanatic, like, it's broad daylight, there's people around, and yeah,
I think my resting bitch face, like, does me wonders sometimes. I am completely okay with not talking to strangers, because honestly, this is why I am partly an extra introvert. I don't see the value in making small talk with someone at all, because I'm just like, I already have a pretty, I don't mean to sound cocky, but I honestly just feel like life is too short for me to spend talking to strangers. I'd rather spend it talking to people that I care about. And so it does brings up this resting bitch face that like I am okay with not entertaining strangers for a very long period of time. And so if that means ignoring someone, unless you blatantly come up to me and say, hey, can I ask for directions? You know, I might make sure that we're in a public place and not alone somewhere. Like my spidey tingly senses might still go up. You know, maybe I'll pull out my taser from the back pocket, just have it handy at some point now that I've heard this story. Yeah. But I mean, I'll always help, but yeah, I'm not going to go out of my way to be like, hey man, you looking for something?
So
in the horror movie,
they did come up to her. It was broad daylight and there was people around, to be fair.
How did no one see this then?
People did see it.
And they just didn't stop it?
I don't think they saw the attack, but they'll say people will later say that Kristen's last whereabouts, she was found, they saw her talking to this couple.
Yeah, but at some point they must have had to drug her, right? Or did they entice her into the car again with some sort of ruse? Like, did they say, oh, knife point. If you give us...
They held her at knife point.
Always yell, people. Always yell.
Yeah, I know, right?
Make a scene.
Fight. Yeah. I was reading something that says always fight.
Always fight. Don't. Always make a scene. It's like the biggest thing I read. There's a few things I read, I don't know, a long time ago. I used to walk sometimes, like when daylight savings comes during fall. You know, I had to walk back from work to the parking garage and it used to be dark. And I used to be very, very alert. And for some reason, I went to true crime and I would listen to and read to all these articles. And some people said, when you're walking alone and you're on high alert, don't tie your hair up. It's an easy way for someone to grab you by, like, your hair.
Yeah, it's like a handle.
Yeah, leave them down. Yeah. And it's sad that, as a woman, I have to think about those things. But... Mm-hmm. In order to keep myself safe, I will think about those things. But yeah, I used to take all the precautions. I used to keep my keys at the ready so I can just get to my car, get in. I get into my car, lock it right away so no one can get in while I'm fidgeting around, adjusting rear view mirrors. But yeah, so always make a scene. Yeah. Especially, you know, whether at gunpoint, knife point, like I'd still rather take my chances getting shot than being abducted.
Right, right. I just read today, and this is a total side tangent. We've kind of made it long, but whatever. This episode is probably going to be short anyway. So, I just read today that Nicki Minaj's husband, he's on house arrest right now because he failed in their new state that they're living in. He failed to register as a sex offender because he held a girl at knife point from her school, walked him to her house, and raped her. At 16 years old, and he is in house arrest on a mansion while this girl was raped like violently.
What? I'm still processing the fact that Nicki Minaj is married to this man.
I know. Now you got to think about it anytime you listen to it, his music. But
or her who music. Is? Oh, okay, her music. I'm like, who is her husband?
Yeah, though? I don't even know who he is, and don't even whatever. But it really sucks. I mean, this is what's really fucked up. We won't get into all the politics, but. As men that come and they just rape people and they don't face more time. And pedophiles too, you know, like we see it over and over again when you listen to true crime. They get arrested. They spend as little as 6 months because they get out on good behavior and they always, almost always do it again. And they get away with it because they're smarter now until they murder somebody. And it's just really fucked up. There's like the death penalty maybe should be on the table for pedophiles and rapists. I don't know. Something. Yeah. But at least life in prison, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can go on such a long rant about this and I really don't want to because that then leads into other stuff. And
right.
I would really love to go on that rant, but I'm just going to, let's just So Kristen French, she gets abducted in broad daylight. Yeah. There were clearly witnesses.
She's held at knife point and she's forced into the car. This time, Paul and Carla left behind a number of witnesses, but that did not help save Kristen. She did fight, though refusing to follow Paul's orders, calling him bastard, just like his mother used to do, and saying, "I don't know how your wife can stand being around you." Sadly, after 3 days of agony, Kristen was severely beaten, strangled to death. Her body was then dumped into a ditch in Burlington, where it was discovered on April 30th, 1992. So this location was actually very close to the cemetery where Leslie Mahaffey is buried, which is part may have helped the police quickly connect the two murders. Not before long, the detectives also began to receive several tips, which included same name, Paul Bernardo. Now, Paul's name was already familiar to the police because of him interviewed during the inquiry into the Scarborough rapists. Now the detective decided to talk with Paul again, but again, they did not really see him as a potential suspect just because he was good-looking, intelligent, and cooperative, which blows my mind because the sketch looks exactly like him.
It doesn't matter. I don't understand why being good-looking makes you immune from committing crimes.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It doesn't.
I mean, fucking ridiculous. I don't understand how that's even a justification. Like, oh my God, you look so good. And so by default, you're not going to commit. Like, I heard, oh my, I'm going to go on this rant about Casey Anthony again, and I'm not going to. Some people said too, she was too pretty to be in jail. And I was just like baffled that people said that. And if you're one of those people, honestly, fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you. As if there had not been charming serial killers before. And then there was one more thing. One little thing. Somehow the police had failed to test the blood and saliva samples from Paul that he had given 2 years ago. 2 years. If the investigators had sat down and analyzed the samples, things could have turned out a bit differently.
Bit?
Of course, the detectives investigating the murders now asked for the test to be done. But it was going to take a while longer before the results were ready.
Oh, God, another 2 years.
So who knows how long Paul Bernardo would have been able to continue his reign of terror. He must have felt quite invisible at this point, so much so that he finally made the biggest mistake he possibly could. Paul savagely beat Carla on December 27th, 1992 with a flashlight. As you have heard, Carla was the only person who knew of all of Paul's darkest secrets. She had been his partner in crime. Literally. And somehow Paul thought it was a good idea to beat Carla so badly she had two black eyes, a broken rib, and bruises all over.
It's all funny even games though, till he does that shit to you.
Exactly right. Even though Carla initially tried to claim her injuries were a result of a traffic accident, she had finally had enough and informed the hospital her husband had brutalized her and she wanted to file charges. Paul was arrested, and just at the same time, the test results came back, proving without a doubt that he was a Scarborough rapist. So at this point, Paul was in prison, and Carla was trying to negotiate full immunity from the prosecution in exchange for her cooperation. Fortunately, the outrageous proposal was denied.
Thank God.
But in the end, Carla still received a deal, 12 years of manslaughter. Needless to say, Carla accepted, as the other options would have been facing charges for three murders, including Tammy's, whose case was now reopened. So I didn't put this in here, but when I was listening to this case and reading about this case, there was a couple details that were like really weird. So one was that the videotapes, right? The evidence of the videotapes were in the walls. And for some reason, the cops were not allowed to take down the walls. When the certain, some videotapes, I don't think all the videotapes, because in my mind, we can talk about this later, I think there was more victims than just the three.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Not just like the ones that Paul raped by himself, but like together. I think there was more and more murders.
Yeah, possibly not minors.
Right. And there's videos of Carla, you know, participating in these videos. And so when she got this deal of 12 years, the videos were not found. Now, Paul's first lawyer had the videos. And I think it took him like a year before he was like, because he was really like, you're supposed to give all the evidence in as a lawyer, I believe.
You can't, it's like, part of discovery. Evidence.
Yeah. And he was withholding the evidence, and he kept going back and forth, like, you know, like, I can't win this case if I give in this evidence, but, like, this is really fucked up, you know? So, not saying what he did was right, because he eventually does the right thing, it just took way too long. So, he gives the new lawyer the evidence and says, you do with what you want, and basically quits. And then this evidence, this new lawyer gives this evidence right away. And so, basically, all I'm saying is that Carla would not have gotten this deal if it wasn't for these tapes.
This is so, like, textbook. Every time someone says, I have information, it means they did it too. And I never understand why there's some cases where I'm just like, okay, you know, the families needed closure and this person's the only one that has that information, and so we're going to give them that immunity. But in this case, it's just, I know that without Carla, they wouldn't have, but they were already on DePaul. So it just, mm-hmm. it seems like granting her immunity was just sort of like a waste.
Right. Well, they don't grant her immunity, but they do give her 12 years for manslaughter. That's what I mean.
Still not enough.
Yeah.
That's probably like 1 year per victim that she had, which is joke.
Yeah. Needless to say, Carla accepted, as the other option would have been facing charges for 3 murders, including Tammy's, whose case was now reopened. So Carla testified against Paul in a trial that took place in 1995, telling nasty details of their relationship and explaining what happened on the deeply disturbing videos of Paul raping and torturing their victims. In turn, Paul's defense tried to prove that Carla was not the victim she portrayed herself to be, but a willing participant, which I agree. The tapes indeed painted a quite different picture of Carla's part in the brutal crimes, but they also showed what kind of monster Paul Bernardo was behind his charming fake persona. The former couple soon became known in the media as Ken and Barbie killers due to their classic good looks. In the end, Paul was sentenced to life in prison without parole for at least 25 years on September 1, 1995. Today, 27 years later, Paul Bernardo has been denied parole several times and will very likely spend the rest of his life behind bars as he should. And what about Carla Homolka? Well, as a lot of you know, that she's out free. People were not happy about the rape and torture tapes, not at all. Unfortunately, Paul's defense had withheld videotapes for 17 months, so the prosecution did not see them before offering the deal for Carla. So we talked about that. They would have never done it if they known that they existed. So Carla served her 12-year sentence and was eventually released on July 4th, 2005. She has since changed her name to Leanne TL and currently lives in Quebec with her husband Thierry Bordelis and their 3 children.
Fuck that.
I know, I would really hate to be her children.
Be her children. How about the person who had the children?
Well, just like they're gonna hear about all this shit, you know.
There's about pictures all this of shit. Her. They're gonna probably live it every single day of their life. They're gonna be known as Carla Homolka's kids, and that's all their identity is gonna be. Which is no fault of the kids. I feel terrible for the kids, but my God, like, changing your name doesn't change your face, idiot.
We can all agree Paul Bernardo got what he deserved, but Carla Homolka received a second chance in life, unlike her sister Leslie or Kristen. Many have criticized and still criticize Carla's deal and her prison sentence, saying she should have remained behind bars like Paul. But what do you think? Was Carla just a vulnerable teenager who fell in love with the wrong person and made some bad decisions?
No.
And already paid a high enough price for that? Or was she a cold-blooded killer who was smart enough to play her cards right and escape a life sentence?
Yes.
Yeah. And do you think...
Were those hard answers?
Not really.
Hard, definite answers on
but
my part?
But do you think there would have been... Like, do you think that Carla would have done what she had done if it wasn't for Paul?
I think if she wouldn't have done the same crimes that she did with Paul, she would have at some point accelerated to that, to something. Right. I think, especially because I knew about the part of the tapes. And I said this in the Charles Manson case about Susan Atkins, mm-hmm. too. Like, to say that you were under the influence of someone and that's why you did that, I think is...
Right. You're, yeah.
At some point, you make the decision, especially with your own sister. That's where she lost me. It's like, no, that is not someone manipulating you to do something. That is you making a conscious decision. When she constantly like ground up Valium and drugged Tammy and then gave her animal anesthesia. Like, all of those were very conscious decisions to contribute to the crime. Not just contribute, but to actively participate in the crime. And when you actively participate, to me, you're equally responsible for what happened. And I don't care if you actually raped them or not, but you are the reason that that happened. Well, yeah, she did. I'm just saying, like, if that, even if that was what she told the cops, mm-hmm. that he made me do it, I don't know if I would have given her any plea deal.
Right. Yeah, I feel like cops lie about plea deals all the time.
So, yeah, I think Carla Homolka is a piece of shit, changed name or not. And I'm sorry for her family that lived with her. I truly, truly mean that.
Yeah, no, I think so, too.
I have no regrets.
I think so, too. I think Carla is 100% responsible for her actions. And she was not a dumb person. She obviously, as soon as Paul beat her, was able to turn him in. So she could have acted way earlier on those things.
Yeah. She clearly had a conscience. She clearly had a concept of wrong and right. And yeah, those were all conscious decisions. Another part that really bugged me about this case when I was reading about it by myself was the fact that the media turned them Ken and Barbie with killers. Like, what the fuck, guys? Come on. As media, you just have to do better. I know everyone's looking for catchy names, but to give them a name like Ken and Barbie only perpetuates this thing about, oh, they're so good looking, I can't believe they did this. Like, fuck that. Monsters don't have to look right. ugly. Monsters just have to be ugly from the inside. And I feel like as a society, the longer we perpetuate this thing where pretty people can't do this and beautiful people can't do that, and how unbelievable that someone who looks like that can do that, whether you think they're ugly or beautiful, it's just weird and stupid to me. I hate that they're called Ken and Barbie killers. I absolutely
hate it. So are we going to call this episode then? We're going to have to come with that. You're going to have to think about it. Call it.
Yeah. I mean, I think you had a good name for it, but that's not, it comes from this like already perpetuated stereotype, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if that's the first thing. Think about it. Like, if you didn't know them as Ken and Barbie killers, is that what you would have called
them? Ken and Barbie?
Let's remove everything about their looks from the story. Imagine someone had reported this entire story just using their names and not commenting on their looks at all. I don't think I would have called them Ken and Barbie killers. I don't know why their looks matter, period. Right.
Something probably just left them with the Scarborough rapists. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or like, who knows? Yeah, or the couple that rapes together. I don't know. I don't know.
You know what's funny? Because I love Small Town Murder, but I haven't listened to it in a while. But you don't like Small Town Murder that much. But they are really long. Sometimes it's like 45 minutes before you get into the episode. But they're funny. They're really funny. They do this thing where they give murder serial killers on their Instagram like really terrible names. It's funny.
Okay. Just for that reason, I'm going to give them a second shot because I completely appreciate that about them. So, yeah, I stand by the fact that I think if this case, true crime case, if I was to go back in time and re-report on this and write all the articles, I would not mention their looks at all. I don't think how good looking they were has anything to do with the horrific crimes that they committed. And I don't think they even deserve to be acknowledged for the fact that they look conventionally good in any sort of way. Like, it's just bizarre that that's a thing we talk about. Anyways, that's my rant for the night. So, Carla Homolka is a piece of shit, and so is Paul Bernardo. And, yeah, that's where I stand on that.
And that is the end of our two-parter. And we will see you next week with a drink in hand. And Richa will be telling us a mysterious story that we do not know about yet.
You and me. Don't let the murder thoughts bite. Good night.